This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, February 20th. I'm Kateri Yoakum from the newsroom of The Wall Street Journal. More than ever, politicians are turning to texting to get the word out. But are they allowed to do that? Turns out it's a bit of a legal gray area. Our politics and tech reporter, Emily Glazer, will join us to explain. That's coming up after these headlines. The European Union is taking aim at American tech companies by asserting what it's calling digital sovereignty over the U.S. and China. The bloc unveiled plans Wednesday to put more restrictions on companies' use of data, as well as technologies like AI and machine learning. They're expected to draft the legislation by the end of 2020, and regulators are likely to hone in on learnings from an ongoing antitrust case against Alphabet, as well as probes into Facebook and Amazon. The U.S. Navy wants to update its technology infrastructure to bolster its cybersecurity defenses and leverage innovations like AI. The Wall Street Journal obtained a memo in which defense officials said the Navy's aging tech has left it susceptible to cyber attacks from China and elsewhere. The memo is just the most recent call to action by Navy leadership. An internal audit last year concluded that the branch was underprepared for the modern security challenges it's facing. Coming up after the break, politics and tech reporter Emily Glazer will join us to explain why presidential candidates have been messaging you lately. If you live in a battleground state or an early nominating state like Iowa or Nevada, chances are you've gotten a text from a political candidate recently. Campaigns are increasingly turning to texting to get the word out, but it's actually kind of a legal gray area. Our politics and tech reporter Emily Glazer joins us from Las Vegas to explain. Emily, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So let's talk about some of the messages that people are receiving. Who's sending them and what kind of things are they saying?
Pretty much anyone involved in politics are sending the messages these days, but you're probably seeing them from presidential candidates, both on the left as well as President Trump on the right. And you're probably getting them from advocacy groups too, whether that's something like MoveOn.org or others. And a lot of these text messages are often from places that you may have not signed up from before, and that's where some voters are caught off guard. They're saying things like, sign up to support our candidate, here's event information, you know, would you like to go to this phone bank, come out and support us, or of course, messages asking for donations. And as we get closer to the general election, we'll see a lot more messages with get out the vote efforts. So it's kind of a range of things, but largely it's asking for support in different ways.
These texts are being described as peer-to-peer texts. What does that mean in this context?
That's a really important distinction when you get into the regulatory aspect of it. So peer-to-peer means that there is an individual sending the text message and that it's not automatically generated. In this case, with these peer-to-peer political texts, there are usually campaign volunteers, campaign staffers, or others associated with the campaign in some way, typically pressing tap, tap, tap on their phone or a laptop or some kind of device to continuously send out these text messages. Usually a lot of the text of the message is pre-written, but it's customized, often a name or a location. And that can be key because these are not automatically generated texts, which have a whole other set of rules.
That sounds very weird because it doesn't sound very like peer-to-peer makes it sound like we're friends and you're sending your friends a text message. Sounds like they're making it feel like it's a friend, but really not so much.
Well, so it depends, right? I mean, I spoke with some of the leading political texting firms, both those that serve Democrats and Republicans. And what they say and what the campaigns say is that for people who choose to respond, they often and can have a full back and forth conversation with that campaign staffer or volunteer. And so that does happen. But the percentage of that happening is quite low because a lot of folks who are receiving these texts either didn't sign up for them or didn't realize they were signing up for them when they were giving their phone number to a campaign when they were, you know, choosing to support that person, or perhaps giving their phone number somewhere else, like a voter registration file, event attendee list, or some kind of survey respondent record, and weren't expecting to ever hear from a campaign.
We've seen this problem with robocalls. People making campaign calls is kind of an old hat, right? So how does this differ? How does this new technology differ from those old style, you know, people in a war room making campaign calls, robocalls, how does this texting now differ from all of that?
Well, they're still making the calls, but what's different, and this especially happened in the 2018 midterm election, is that peer-to-peer texting just blew up. There isn't a whole lot of data about it, but Democratic campaigns and politically adjacent organizations sent 350 million text messages through two of the largest left-leaning political texting campaigns, Hustle and Get Through. And again, that was in 2018. We're expecting hundreds of millions, if not a billion, in 2020. But they still are having these kind of war rooms. People might, you know, campaigns might have events like phone banking events where people may also be texting. When I spoke with some of the presidential campaigns, one of the things they mentioned is that a lot of volunteers or staffers can also just do this on their own. I spoke with one organization, and a source had mentioned to me that even a top executive at a political texting firm in between important meetings was hitting that tap, tap, tap on the phone to still get the message out as much as possible. So the idea is you can kind of do it and multitask wherever you are. You know, maybe you're on the elliptical, maybe you're sitting in a meeting, maybe you are, you know, working on something else, but you can keep on sending these text messages. And so I think with the emails that we're overrun with, and the people kind of hating robocalls these days, texting seems to be this other platform where political campaigns can get through. The question is just, how long will that last?
You said that this is kind of murky legal territory, and that the peer-to-peer texting is different from an auto text. Can you just explain the two sides of this?
Sure. So basically, if it's peer-to-peer, that means an individual is involved. And that's what these political texting firms and the campaigns say that these political texts are. But if they involve automation, that makes them subject to this telephone consumer protection law that requires explicit consent from recipients. So in this case, that would be voters or people who are receiving the texts. And if they don't get that consent, there it could lead to stiff financial penalties for violations. So for now, this remains in this gray area where it is viewed as peer-to-peer. There is an individual involved, but there are a lot of questions moving forward of whether consent will need to be required in the future.
So let's talk about the efficacy of this. I mean, you're basically saying, different from those phone banks, they're able to reach a lot more people a lot faster and kind of all the time. Are they seeing results from this?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more than not doing it. But I think what we're noticing now, as telecom carriers like Verizon or AT&T are starting to figure out where they might want to put up some guideposts, or if they even can, there are some challenges that I think could come down the line. So for instance, Verizon asks political campaigns to use a text message distribution system that requires consumer consent. And they say that messages sent through other channels risk getting flagged as spam. So that can be a big issue. And a lot of the political texting firms did say to me that they're increasingly seeing texts that are getting flagged as spam and undeliverable, especially those that might have like a link in the first text message. So instead, they'll save any links to this to when someone replies. AT&T doesn't want to risk blocking political messages. So for now, they have this special code. It's actually called classification Q. And that lets the text messages go through. That's what sources told myself and Sarah Krause, who worked on this story with me. But there's also this industry group where they just said this summer that new best practices say that political organizations should secure consumers' consent before they start sending messages. And for now, political organizations are not following that because that's not the rule of the law. So we could see where this might start getting a little more complicated as time goes on.
We are seeing candidates really use texting a lot. Michael Bloomberg has been actually paying people to do this. What's the legality around that?
So the legality is one big question mark. The Federal Election Commission, which oversees campaign finance law, does not have any rules on whether there should be any sort of disclaimers for influencers or sponsored content. The Federal Trade Commission, which oversees that for companies, have said that merely tagging a brand or business on social media is some kind of form of endorsement, and that falls under its purview and should be disclosed. If an audience would view an endorsement differently, knowing that that the influencer had financially benefited from it. So this just, again, falls into this very gray area of whether it needs to be disclosed or not. And in politics, the rules have not caught up to what we're seeing in the corporate world.
So you're in Nevada right now. Have you been talking to people about how this is impacting the caucuses that are scheduled for this weekend there?
Yeah, my colleagues and I have been up and down the state in Nevada, and definitely voters are getting texts from a bunch of different campaigns that are really encouraging them to either go out and vote early, which just ended earlier this week, or caucus, which starts on Saturday. So those texts are definitely flying, that's for sure. Nevada is a really important state that could help decide the fates of different candidates since it's still a relatively close race. With Sanders leading the way and then a bunch of candidates lining up for the second slot.
All right. Well, we'll be watching. Politics and tech reporter Emily Glazer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that was your tech news briefing. Don't forget that if you like this podcast, you can rate and review us in your app store. And if you want more news about Wall Street Journal podcasts, you can follow us on Twitter at WSJ Podcasts. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.